From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last Wednesday when USA Today's editor-in-chief, David Calloway, said that his paper could stop publishing a daily print edition as soon as the next 5 or 6 years. Calloway was participating in an Internet Week New York media panel. He was asked about print editions, but he added that he expects a print product of some kind would likely continue for the rest of our careers. How long will that career be? He didn't say. He added that he thinks the print edition is still lucrative. Sometime this summer, Gannett plans to split off its publishing business from its other assets, and Gannett's not the first company to shield its more profitable lines of business from some of the decline in print advertising. We've seen News Corp, Time Warner, Tribune Media, they've all essentially done the same thing. Some have speculated this means the eventual end of Gannett as a print publication company, but is that too big a leap here? Can Gannett continue to succeed by spinning off publishing? The Democrat and Chronicle has not reduced its print run, and managers have recently touted statistics showing that relative to its market size, the Democrat and Chronicle is reaching more people than just about any paper in the country. But what is the paper's future here? In the past month, 3 veteran reporters have left the Democrat and Chronicle. Is there a long-term future for aspiring print reporters? Let's talk about the health and the future of the newspaper industry this hour with my guest, Karen Magnuson, executive editor at the Democrat and Chronicle. Great to have you in studio.
Oh, great to be here. Thank you.
I always say recognize your biases. My bias is I'm a subscriber. I've said on this program before, I'm proud of the membership model WXXI. I also think that every community needs strong newspapers, and I think that continues going forward. I think Rochester is fortunate to have some of the great journalists that the Democrat and Chronicle has. So that's my bias. I want to see success in the newspaper industry, and it's nice to talk about that. So.
Well, I very much appreciate that, Evan, and we appreciate you being a subscriber.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I was a little unnerved by what I saw from USA Today's editor-in-chief last week. Were you?
Unnerved? I wouldn't say unnerved. I frankly appreciate candor and transparency, and that was what was on David's mind at the time, apparently, and you know, he's free to have his own opinion.
Did it surprise you, thinking about USA Today ending its daily print run in 5 or 6 years?
Not necessarily, because we've seen that happen with other newspapers in other markets. It depends on the market. It really depends on the strategic business model. It depends on a whole host of factors and where the audience is for that particular kind of journalism. Here in Rochester, we have such a print following, a loyal print following, that we certainly have no plans to take away any of our 7-day-a-week print coverage.
Well, let's talk about that then. And I mentioned at the outset that what you've been touting in recent months is the fact that if you look relative to its market size, the Democrat and Chronicle is doing remarkably well. Explain more about that.
Well, we're very, very strong. The DNC is investing in a new downtown headquarters, as many people know. We hope to be in that brand new building a year from now. We're also continuing to grow our revenues on the digital side and through our full access subscription model. Now everybody needs to pay for the news. It used to be in the days of old, just the print subscribers picked up the tab. But now digital access also has a price to it, so that everybody that subscribes to the DNC helps fund our journalism.
Yeah, so when it comes to that digital access, for example, we've seen the New York Times offer, I think, 10 articles a month, and then you've got to subscribe online.
Mm-hmm.
Explain what the Democrat and Chronicle's model is online.
It's a very similar model. I mean, you're able to gain access to some articles, but eventually you're going to be able to hit a paywall, and we'll ask you to subscribe if you'd like to continue further.
And the paywall is working? I ask because I got into a bit of a heated debate on social media last year with a fellow media member who was indicating, well, that paywall can be circumvented. And I said, that's a little bit like walking down the street and seeing a stack of papers for sale and no one notices, and you're just going to grab one and walk off with it. If you wouldn't do that, then you probably shouldn't try to get around paywalls at every turn. But is it circumventable?
Well, you can gain access through social media. And so if you spot a story on your Facebook feed, for example, and you're not a subscriber to the Democrat and Chronicle, you're able to click through that so you can read the story, which we think is all part of the social media world, as people are sharing our information. And we're hoping that once you see that story, you're going to want more. And in order to make sure that you're taking advantage of all that the DNC has to offer, you really do need to ultimately subscribe.
Are millennials willing to do it? I ask because millennials don't, I don't know if they read anything. I don't mean to be cynical, but most of the numbers I see in terms of book reading, magazine reading, print edition reading, that millennials don't read much. What do your models look like in terms of generational readership?
Generational readership. Well, I can safely say that our biggest supporters of the print edition are folks my age, boomers, and older. They love the print edition. And they also like to go to the print edition online, particularly when they're out of town. So if there are folks that have their snowbirds and they have homes in Florida that they go to or rent, they often will look at our print edition that is called the e-edition online, and they really love that. Generation X, which is a real sweet spot for our target audience, generally 35 to 45, they tend to read the print edition at least on occasion, especially Sunday. That tends to be our largest circulation day. And we need to increase their frequency. They will come to us during the week for stories through various digital platforms. Some do subscribe 7 days, but our goal is to have all of the Generation X be as supportive of our access to all of our editions as the boomers are right now.
They're gettable, you think?
Yes, they are. And then millennials, I wouldn't write them off, Evan, because they really are big consumers of news. They just tend to consume their news through their smartphone, and they're not using the DNC as a destination point. They're finding us through their social network feeds and also through search. So let's say there's a story happening out at Grease Ridge Mall, as was the case yesterday. They might just type in a couple of words through Google, search for it. Up comes any number of stories from us and TV stations around town, and they're going to click on that to find out what is going on. Hopefully, they'll know that the DNC is providing perhaps a more comprehensive look at what's going on, and they'll make sure that they click on the DNC whenever they see it.
It reminds me a bit of the conversation we had recently about the way that millennials tend not to be appointment television viewers. So, for example, they are sharing, I'll give you, just throw an example out, Jimmy Fallon clips, 4-minute clips all the time on social media, but they're almost never watching his show when it's on live. Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of thing where you may not buy a print edition, but you're looking for articles and then you're sharing certain articles. Same kind of idea?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And we are able to actually see this in real-time metrics that we're now using in our newsroom. At any given time, we know how many people are clicking on a story, how long they're staying with that story, and whether or not they came to us through Facebook, Twitter, other social networks, or through search.
Can you make money that way, though?
Oh, absolutely. The fact is, if people come to the DNC for our journalism, whether it's through search, through social, through other means, they are reading our journalism and ultimately, hopefully, paying for it themselves. But then advertisers also reap the benefits of those eyeballs, and people will see the ads, and then they'll patronize those businesses, and the businesses will continue to advertise.
I see. A good sign of the interest in the Democrat and Chronicle in this community is I haven't even mentioned the phone number. The phone's ringing. If you want to join the conversation, you can. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. My guest is executive editor Karen Magnuson of the Democrat and Chronicle. I remember, I bet you it was 2005, I bet you it was 10 years ago when I was working at 13 WHAM News, and there were a lot of discussions about, well, a decline in traditional advertising revenue, but eventually the hope was that internet revenue could eclipse it or come close. It never did when I was there. And I now want to quote from an Atlantic Monthly article about the newspaper business. Now, I got to be careful. This is now 2 years old and that we're dating ourselves. But their headline was, "This is the scariest statistic about the newspaper business today." They wrote, quote, "Here it is. In 2012, newspapers lost $16 in print ads for every $1 earned in digital ads. And it's getting worse. According to a new report by Pew Research, in 2011, that ratio was 10 to 1. Do we see that in the Democrat and Chronicle? Are you concerned about that ratio?
Oh, sure. I'm concerned about the ratio. There's no question that digital often is less expensive than what advertisers have been paying for in print. And part of that is because of just the dedicated reach of our print product is, in fact, as you mentioned earlier, tops in the nation. It's amazing how many adults that we reach in this market at least one day a week, and also a lot of them are 7 days a week. So advertisers here are used to the reliability of the print edition, and they may have questions about exactly how many people are coming to us through digital, but now we have metrics to show that we have a lot of people coming to us through digital, and a lot of those eyeballs are tending to be younger. Our mobile audience is growing by leaps and bounds, and our digital revenue is up year over year, and it's a good source of revenue, but there's no question that there are other things that we must do in order to make sure that the business is stabilized. That's why we now have the full paid subscription model where you must pay no matter what platform you're coming to. That's also why our advertising department has branched out into other services such as digital marketing services, where they're selling not just ads for the newspaper, but helping businesses set themselves up by handling social media and helping them be able to reach the audience that they need. We also are looking into an event strategy that allows us to engage the community more often and raise money through those means. So I think we're expanding our horizons and making sure that we're exploring every possible option to support our business for the years to come. Right now, it's steady as she goes, and what we're doing is exploring and innovating to make sure that we can continue to do that for the future.
And to be clear, stating the point again, is there any reason to think the Democrat and Chronicle will eliminate any days in its print run anytime?
No. At this point in time, our print readership is strong. Can you imagine if we have the largest print readership for a market of our size in the country, and we decided, nope, okay, we're gonna cut out a couple of days? I think we'd hear from our readers on that, don't you think?
Sure.
So it's just a smart business move to keep it intact, at least for now. I don't have a crystal ball, so I can't say that it's never going to happen. I can say that I certainly hope that it won't happen in my lifetime, but I do know that it really does depend, A, on the market, whether or not the market can support the print product, B, on the consumer. If more consumers are consuming their news on digital platforms and people are not willing to pay for the print product, then the market really takes you there. It's not really a decision that ultimately the publisher makes, in my mind. We have to be very close to our audience and give the audience what they need. And right now, they still need the print product in a big way.
I think that point is a fair one. I've said it before. Vote with your wallet. It's a cultural document. I had a conversation with colleague Brenda Tremblay earlier today. We were talking about the value of a cult. I think of the Democrat and Chronicle's front page as a cultural document, don't you?
Oh, I love that characterization, cultural document.
I stole
yes.
it from Brenda. She said that this morning. And so... It matters. It is a snapshot of your community and the values, and I think you do have to vote with your wallet. And if we don't, we shouldn't be surprised if it goes away. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like what you're saying is don't expect that anytime soon here. So
absolutely. I got to tell you, I've been in the business for a long time now. I'm not going to tell you exactly how many years because that's really going to date myself. But I'm more excited about journalism today than ever because it's all about the journalism for me. All right. What we're talking about is a platform for distribution, but the DNC at its very heart and core is all about the journalism that we produce. We're trying very hard to make sure that we're producing journalism that reaches everybody in our community, those who don't read print, those who use digital on a regular basis, and those who use both. And it's our responsibility to do that. But when push comes to shove, I mean, journalism will always survive. I think that journalism is needed in a democracy.
Let me grab our first phone call. And this is Paul in Brighton. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, hi. I'm a subscriber to the DNC. I get the print edition. I also subscribe to the New York Times online and also the Wall Street Journal. And One thing that's of concern to me, I was looking at the Times actually the other day, the print edition, and I was astonished at how many pictures, white space, advertising is on the first four pages. Really less than 50% would be what you would call text. And that's quite a contrast to what it was even, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. And of course, if you look at the front page of any any newspaper, say 100 years ago or more, it was entirely text, almost no pictures, and quite dense and quite small. So the amount of information was quite large, and it's just getting, from my perspective, worse and worse. The amount of news is getting thinner and thinner, and you know we need information, and I understand one of the reasons for this is, well, it just sells papers. People are looking for some visual appeal, and there's something you have to do to attract the potential readers to buy the newspaper or even the online edition. But it's something that should be a concern to all of us that, yeah, we should be buying the paper. We need to get what it's supposed to be providing, which is information.
Paul, thanks for the call. Karen, go ahead.
Okay. Well, Paul, first of all, I'd just like to thank you for being a subscriber. We really appreciate your support. But also, I just want to say that, first of all, advertisers love that A section. They really love to be in that first section of the newspaper. And, you know, if I had my druthers, I'd like to spread all of the ads out. So there'd be just as many ads in sports, for example, as there is in the A section. But that's really not the case. And so that's one of the reasons why you might see more ads in the first section. Secondly, I just would like to note that we actually increased the amount of news in the newspaper, particularly national and international news, through a partnership with USA Today. So the B section, as you know, is now all national and international news, so that we can focus our efforts locally on what's going on in the Rochester area. And it's not just news in the A section, that first section in the print edition. We also have local news in the living section and in the sports section, and then the other special sections that we produce throughout the week, like Weekend Magazine, and of course, extra sections on Sunday. So I appreciate your perspective. The advertising is something we absolutely need in order to be able to serve you. And as the folks in advertising like to remind me, hey, Karen, advertising is content too. People love to read the ads, and that's how businesses reach them. And so
not everybody loves to read the ads.
Maybe not everybody.
I'm with you that the ads are necessary. I don't know if I could say that everyone loves to read the ads.
Well, I got to tell you, if there's a coupon insert missing from the Sunday newspaper, I do hear from people. So some people buy the newspaper partly, if not wholeheartedly, because of the advertising. So again, we're trying to serve everybody's needs as best we can. And it's quite a bit to juggle, but we feel confident that we've got the right mix.
Now, looking down the list of, do you look around the country and are you focused more on Gannett properties? It looks like Advance Publications has gone, a lot of their properties have gone to 3 days a week, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. You know, you go down that list of Birmingham News, Press Register in Mobile, Alabama, Huntsville Times, Bay City Times in Michigan, Saginaw News in Michigan, Patriot News in Pennsylvania. And then there have been home delivery cutbacks, which I guess is another question. Home delivery, is that a question?
Mm-hmm. No, not that we've had any discussions on that at the DNC, but I do pay very close attention to what's going on in the newspaper industry. I'm a member of the board of directors for the American Society of News Editors, and I meet with those editors on a regular basis, and they're from outside Gannett. So I'm, of course, very on top of what's going on in Gannett land, but also I'm very curious about what others are doing. Some are experimenting with limiting their print days and their delivery, and I like to see exactly what happens there and what lessons that we can learn from it. But I just want to reiterate that it's all based on the market. If the market isn't really supporting a print edition, that forces people to look at, well, do we have to cut back on the number of days that we print? Not so here in Rochester.
What does the Gannett split from the publication side compared to the other assets. What does that mean for the company? What does it mean for the Democrat and Chronicle?
Mm-hmm. Well, the split is really interesting. The first time I've ever been through anything like this. But one of the good pieces of news about the split is that we are spinning off without any debt. So the broadcast side that is going to be under a new company name is taking the debt with it. So can you imagine starting off a business with debt-free? I think that shows a lot for our stability, and we will be ready to grow. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you noticed yesterday, Evan, but Gannett announced a huge purchase of 11 digital first media properties. So that's like a real-time indicator of our health. If we weren't strong, if Gannett wasn't strong, we would not be out there buying other newspapers.
You have gone through some restructuring. We had a chance to talk to Julie Philip on this program recently, had a great conversation with her. And I think she was very candid. First of all, she's relatively new to the company. And second of all, no one can predict exactly what's coming. Everyone would like to think that the recent restructuring, the current scenario, is a stabilization point. So first, let me ask you, what has been the hardest part about what's been happening in recent years?
The hardest part? I would say that the hardest part is changing the culture and the workflow of a newsroom that has been very focused on print for many years. We have many experienced journalists who grew up on print, just like I did. And so to shift that mindset to think digital first, and to go from being a reporter who was really focused on writing narrative and had one or two daily deadlines to a reporter that really needed to be thinking about a deadline every minute, or actually every second now, producing digital storytelling such as video. So that has been a big cultural shift, and one that we're successfully transforming. I think moving into the new building a year from now is really going to help. For as much as I love the old building that we're in at 55 Exchange, I mean, I feel like Superman's going to fly through the window any minute. It's just a beautiful old building. But it's hard to really change the mindset of the journalists inside that old building when you're not surrounded by new technology and really the new way of storytelling. So I would say that's probably been the most difficult piece. And the second most difficult piece would be really balancing the needs of protecting the integrity of the print product while you're innovating for the future with digital. But I've got such a talented crew that we've been having some fun with that. And while we certainly have had our challenges, I feel like we're successfully moving through some very challenging times.
You do have some tremendous journalists there, and that's the reason why they're routine guests on this program. Tell you at times that if the hard part, again, Karen saying the hardest part is understanding and kind of adapting to the new age of journalism, but do they ever push back and say, look, we'll do it, but we've got to have journalism at the core. That's what we were trained for. That's what we want to do. We don't want to sacrifice that.
Oh, absolutely. We do talk about that on a regular basis. And I reiterate the core values that we've had since I came to the Democrat and Chronicle in 1999, believe it or not, 1999. So the core values have basically been the same. The first core value is upholding our First Amendment responsibilities. And that's really essentially being a watchdog for the community. And to be honest with you, in the reorganization that we just underwent, we expanded the watchdog team. So now we have 7 watchdog reporters, more than we've ever had before. The second core value is reflecting the diversity of the community, making sure that we're covering everybody in the community and not just those with the loudest voice or the people with power. The third core value is producing a top-notch local report. Our franchise is local news, so that's what we focus on being the best at. The fourth core value is assuring accuracy and credibility. No matter what kind of storytelling we're doing, the most important thing to us is being accurate, and then therefore that leads to credible. And then there was a core value that I added just a few years ago that I felt was very important for our future, and that's innovating for the future. So we're challenging our journalists to be more creative and come up with our own ideas on how to reach these young people that seem to be a little bit elusive online.
Dave on Twitter says, the new focus is well done. Let Gannett handle national and local reporters focus on local issues. It works well for readers. And that's exactly what...
Oh, thank you very much, David.
What Karen is talking about. But in the last month, you have lost three reporters with a lot of experience. Mm-hmm. Karen Miltner, a longtime food reporter, among other things. Matt Daneman, a business reporter. And I just read, I think yesterday on Twitter, I think Jim Mandolaro is leaving. Mm-hmm. And so that those are three reporters with a lot of experience. Can you replace that? And are you concerned that they're deciding to leave?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I just want to say that I really already miss Karen and Matt, and Jim is still working for us. So, but I will miss him when he leaves too. All three of them, excellent, top-notch journalists. And as you know, again, I've been with the DNC since 1999. So whenever I see one of my flock fly the coop, I obviously am disappointed. But everyone really needs to move on to what is going to make them happiest. And for each one of them, it's an entirely different circumstance where they decided to follow their own star in a different direction. And I would just also have to say that if you looked at our turnover in comparison to other newsrooms across the country, even though the loss of those three journalists is significant, I would just say our turnover is extremely low. I mean, one of the reasons why we have such experienced journalists in Rochester is because they chose to stay. So even though I hate to see them go, it does provide us with another opportunity to bring in fresh talent and people who are actually more trained in being able to tell stories on digital platforms. And they will be able to then start building on that experience and one day become their own brand, like Karen Miltner was for Food and Drink, for example. And speaking of food and drink, we have a brand new food and drink writer who just started this week. Very excited about her. She's been a freelancer for years, but also super creative and energetic, and her name is Tracy Schumacher, so be looking for her byline.
It was interesting. I wondered when Karen left, would you replace her, or at least fill the position, because a lot of newspapers around the country no longer have food and drink writers. That is a big change from 10 or 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So that will be interesting. You didn't have to fill that position, I think, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, I didn't have to, but I want to. food and drink, big passion for Rochester. Of course, you know, Evan, our beautiful wine country in our backyard from your great book. We believe that food and drink is a real part of our lifestyle here, and it's a special lifestyle for our community. And we want to be able to reflect that in creative ways as we move forward and build a local report that really serves the needs of digital consumers.
And so before I jump back to the phones, the loss of these three reporters in the last month, you don't view it as an indictment of what's been going on in the industry or specifically here?
I don't. And I think if you asked all three of them, they'd probably tell you a little something different about why they decided to move on. But it is an opportunity for us to bring in some fresh talent. And let me just say again, all three of those journalists, my hat goes off to them. They produced some awesome journalism for many years for the DNC, and we wish them well.
And you're working on replacing Matt Daneman, I assume?
Absolutely. Well, actually, right now, Bennett Loudon is taking over the economy beat and is doing quite well with it. So we'll see how he does.
Okay, very good. Back to the phones, and this is Mike in Penfield. Go ahead, Mike. You're on with Karen Magnuson, executive editor for the Democrat and Chronicle.
Hello to both of you.
Hi
there.
My question is, how much does the average reporter make in salary?
Oh, the average reporter. To be honest with you, I've never actually factored in the average, but the ranges go from about $35,000 for entry level up to $80,000.
How many make $80,000?
Well, of course, I'm not going to divulge that kind of information. But may I ask why you're asking?
Well, because I think journalism is known as a low-paying field, and sometimes that has an effect on quality. This leads to my next question: is do you think the newspaper favors features and feel-good stories over hard news?
Do I think that it does? No, but I would say that we strive to have a balance of good news as well as bad that naturally occurs, because I think in order to properly reflect the sense of a community, it can't be all about just the bad news going on in your community. There are a lot of good news stories to be told.
Or the good.
Pardon me?
Or the good either. Or just the features, the little kids visiting the nursing homes and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Well, interestingly enough, whenever I come to a speaking engagement like this, some people challenge me saying that we're not publishing enough good news about the community. And I generally say, go back and take a look at today's newspaper, because we do try to provide a balance to reflect what's going on in the community at large, so that people aren't dwelling just on the negative news. Because news by its very nature tends to be negative. That's why it's news. But we search out the good things that are happening too. So again, to have a balanced picture of what Rochester is all about.
Mike, I hope that answers your question. Are you feeling like there's not enough hard news?
I am, yes.
Did you take a look at today's newspaper?
Mike, thanks for the call. And look, I mean, I think it's perfectly legitimate for people to wonder, are we getting enough hard news? Karen, you are saying that you more commonly get complaints from people who say there's not enough good news, that it's too negative?
Yes. That's at speaking engagements, I can guarantee that question almost always comes up. Why aren't we reporting the good things that are happening in the community? When in fact we do. It's just the bad stories that people tend to remember and dwell on.
I can't remember who said it, but I've always isn't that great when you hear a great quote and then throughout the years it stays in your head and you can't remember who said it? But somebody once said that when it comes to questions you ask someone in an interview, if it makes them uncomfortable, it's journalism. If they're comfortable, it's PR. And, you know, the same kind of thing is said for reporting, that if it's pleasant, it's PR, and if it makes people uncomfortable, it's journalism. I think that's probably a little too far, but I'm curious to know what you think the role of, say, the Democrat and Chronicle is in, you have to balance relationships. You know, for example, Unite Rochester pulls in a lot of people from around the community in various roles, some of them government. You have to balance relationships while also being willing to report very firmly when it's appropriate. How do you balance that?
Mm-hmm. Well, in Unite Rochester, we've made it very clear that we're developing partnerships and we're having conversations for the good of the community as a whole. And I think everybody in the community agrees with the notion that we should have a prosperous Rochester. Our philosophy behind Unite is that we all need to work together to make sure that that is so. Everybody that is involved with Unite knows that that doesn't affect our reporting about them or any particular individual. If there is something negative that surfaces about that individual, it's just the way it goes. But it's something that we need to make sure that we always protect. That's upholding our First Amendment responsibilities, which I mentioned is our highest core value. I think it's also worth noting that we have chosen to invest in watchdog reporting. And I don't know if the gentleman who was speaking to us earlier considers watchdog reporting hard news or if he's just thinking about breaking news. But breaking news, the print medium is not really the best medium for breaking news. We tend to focus a little bit more on breaking news on our digital platforms and then come back and provide more context in the print edition. But watchdog reporting, which is exclusive reporting that about a topic that holds a government or a person or a business accountable for wrongdoing or at least questionable behavior, that is something that we consider to be hard news because it's looking at problems in a really hard and in-depth way.
No question.
In a way that nobody else will. So while watchdog reporting takes a lot more time, even though we have 7 watchdog reporters, you're not going to see 7 watchdog reports every day because watchdog stories take a lot more time and investment.
Amen.
Yeah. So, but it, hopefully, I mean, our goal is to have at least one watchdog story a week. And that, you know, that's something that we're serving up on a regular basis so that everybody knows what's going on in our community.
Part of your job, I imagine, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, is if you have a team of journalists that is working effectively and appropriately, sometimes they're doing the kind of watchdog work that others don't like. And I imagine once in a while your phone rings and someone's complaining. You know, you can answer this however you want. You don't have to give any specific stories. But do you get phone calls from people in power saying, I don't appreciate you doing such and such story?
Absolutely. I just got a call over the weekend from a public official who shall remain unnamed because of some questions that this person received from a reporter. And so I always talk with the person who calls and explain to them that I'll certainly look into it and let them know what's going on in terms of our philosophy about the reporting. But rarely does that ever give me pause to not follow something or not pursue or report on something. It sometimes heightens my sensitivity to that person's perspective so that I make sure that the context is there in the reporting. But yes, that's part of my job. And I welcome that sort of dialogue because I think if people don't share their feelings, then sometimes they might have a misperception about our intention. Our intention is to report the truth as we know it based on the reporting. And we're not out to hurt anybody at any time. We're out to tell the truth about what we know and to advance the quality of life in our community with what we're able to reveal.
And from someone like Mike, who is wondering about hard news versus features, the Democrat and Chronicle has a team of experienced journalists, and if we pulled them privately, you think they'd say, Karen Magnuson has my back?
I would absolutely hope that they would say that. I would think that they would. One of the benefits of being here since 1999 is that they know who I am. They know a lot about me, and I know a lot about them, and I think they know that I have their back, but also I know that I have theirs, and they have mine.
We're going to get to more of your phone calls in just a moment. Cameron had a question about Gannett and the print run. Says he loves his daily edition of the Democrat and Chronicle. He had a question. We'll get it to Karen when we come back from this very short break. And then a few more of your phone calls as we get ready to close the hour with the executive editor of the Democrat and Chronicle, Karen Magnuson, next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, it's our Rochester Real Estate Roundtable. We'll take a look at the regional real estate trends from Rochester to the Finger Lakes. We'll talk about who has the advantage, buyers or sellers. What kind of homes are popular right now with buyers? What are the trends and what are people asking for? All of those questions and your questions answered as well in our Real Estate Roundtable next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The impetus for our conversation this hour was the news last week. I say news, more of speculation from the editor-in-chief of USA Today that within 5 or 6 years, we could see USA Today eliminate its daily print edition. That doesn't mean never have a print edition. It might mean not every day, not every weekday. And that stirred up a bit of feedback in the industry or conversation about where the newspaper industry is going. And of course, the Democrat and Chronicle is a Gannett property, but we've been hearing from the executive editor, Karen Magnuson, this hour that the Democrat and Chronicle continues to be strong within its market, that there's no expectation or need for any reduction in print run. Cameron is a subscriber, says he loves his daily edition and wants to know if other Gannett properties suffer, are they going to cut across the board? And I think what he's asking is, let's say Gannett decides, and they're in the process of splitting off the companies with sort of the publication side versus other assets. He's asking, if Gannett decides we've got to cut print runs, not every property is as healthy as the Democrat and Chronicle. Will they say 3 days a week for everyone? Or will they look at it market by market and say, hey, Rochester's doing well. We're not going to cut the print run there, but maybe we'll cut it here, here, and here.
Mm-hmm. I certainly can't speak for the executives of Gannett, but what I do know is from my experience in the company, they are very market-centric, and they make decisions, put the hands of those decisions in the publisher's hands, rather. I talked to Michael Caine, our fearless leader, before I came onto this program, and you know what he said? He said, Karen, we're fine in Rochester for a long time to come, and depending upon economics and select markets that don't enjoy our readership, penetration, and digital audience, might reduction in frequency ever be a possibility? Companies would be foolish not to look at it as warranted. So again, it depends on the market. Fortunately, our market is super strong, and so will it happen in other Gannett markets? Maybe it already is happening in places like Detroit, for example, but it's not something that I think would be an across-the-board decision. At least that's certainly my perspective, and I think Michael's perspective as well.
Brad wants to know, if you could go back 10 years, what would you do differently?
Oh, go back 10 years. That is a really, really good question. What I would do differently, I believe if I could go back 10 years knowing what I know now, I would have pushed a lot harder sooner to transform our newsrooms and to start innovating, particularly with mobile. A couple years back, I actually decided to go back for a master's program. I was Master of Science in Innovation Management at RIT because I really needed to expand my toolbox as an editor, particularly with all of the digital platforms coming about and innovation being so critical. And one of the things that I learned there, of course, is that the newspaper industry is not the only industry that is dealing with transformation and disruption. And the companies that seem to successfully identify their challenges early on and then really go about boldly innovating and testing the waters despite the fact that their revenues were still really strong are the ones that happen to be able to succeed more quickly. And in some cases, the newspaper industry, I think, is taking too long to rally. And there are pockets of newspapers that are innovating. And with Gannett's help, we're doing that. Rochester is a pilot for a lot of Gannett's digital ideas because of the fact that we have such a strong market here and we have such a talented staff. And so I love that part about the business right now. And I just wish that I could have gotten started on it a lot sooner.
You can call me conspiratorial for asking, but once in a while you'll see a Gannett story come up on your news feed. This one didn't get a lot of attention in the big press, so maybe I would be reading too much into it. But on May 13th, the CEO of Gannett, Gracia Marturi, sold 80%, more than 80% of her stock, $4.3 million worth, leaving her with just over $1 million in Gannett stock. If your CEO sells more than 80% of her shares, is that a concern to you?
Well, I haven't talked to Gracia about it.
You're not her advisor?
No.
But did it worry you?
Not really, because she's going to be CEO of the new company, and so you know maybe she wants to put her money there. It doesn't really concern me. The fact is that again, I like to focus on the journalism. I feel like if you look at every little thing like that and you let it distract you, then you're not going to be an effective leader for your people. What I do know is my publisher's vision, Michael Caine's vision, is strong. His leadership is strong. Our market is strong. I have a room full of really strong and talented journalists, and we're going to kick ass and take names for as long as I possibly can make it so.
So if somebody came into your office and said, hey, how come Gracia did that? Is that a sign of no confidence? You would say to your
staff.
You
know what? To be honest with you, you're the first person that's asked me about it. I haven't heard anything from a reader or anybody on my staff.
That's why I said it might be conspiratorial. I've seen it online. I've not seen it in big headlines, so I don't think it's viewed as insider training or a sign of no confidence.
Yeah.
Just thought it was interesting that the CEO was doing that. But
she's no longer, she's in the you're calling her the CEO, and she's technically CEO right now. And we love her. But she's going to be CEO of the new company. So it doesn't surprise me that she's moving on, because she physically is when the spin takes place.
All right, Iris in Pittsford. Go ahead, Iris.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, I'm going to give two quick questions. One is, I'm a longtime reader, and I'm concerned. I notice a lot of cutting back on what I call the accessories, the things that make the newspaper a little more interesting and more magazine-like, which I've always enjoyed. For example, cutting the Sunday magazine. I noticed the birth announcements have disappeared. I remember a few years ago that rather notorious attempt to remove the New York Times crossword puzzle. And I find that upsetting, because there's less and less of those little interesting tidbits that make it, a newspaper interesting. The other comment I have, and I'll take the information off the phone, is that I'm a taxpayer, and I had what I thought was a very interesting story about a local school administrator who's a double dipper, makes $100,000 pension, but also is making lots and lots of money. He's an East Side interim superintendent, and I called your news office. This was well over a year ago, and I really got a very strong brush off about it, and I wondered, who gets to decide what is news? I thought that was very interesting. All right, and I'll take this off the air.
Iris, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Karen.
Iris, I really want to hear from you. I don't think that you called my office. I'd really be interested in hearing who you spoke with and get more details on what that story might be about. Ultimately, I decide what's news, but I have a team of really great leaders in my newsroom, including our news director, Dick Moss, who helps me with that decision making. And we decide on a collaborative basis. It's not like I sit there in my office and say, okay, this is the news and this isn't. We have a team that collaborates so that we can make sure that we have a variety of opinions that are involved in that decision making. In terms of some of the niceties that you mentioned, the birth announcements and whatnot, we, in our reorganization, had to take a look at, through our readership research and through our digital metrics, what content people were reading, what content people weren't, and we had to make some tough decisions about the content that people were not reading anymore. And while we knew that some people still read the birth announcements, for example, that's not something that we could any longer invest time in if we were going to grow our watchdog report and do some of the other exclusive enterprise that we think is really more important to the health and survival of the newspaper and our prosperous community.
Bob in Fairport with a question on graphs, charts, and tables says sometimes it seems that you print graphs, charts, and tables that look like they're designed for color, but they're printed in black and white, and he finds it frustrating if that's the case. Just wanted to know if that happens on occasion.
He's probably referring to our USA Today edition, and on occasion that has occurred, and I've gotten a couple of phone calls about it. So what we do is then communicate with USA Today to see if there was a little bit of a misstep in communication between USA Today and our printing folks, and we try to avoid that from happening. Our goal is to print charts and graphs that should be in color. Sometimes that doesn't happen, but want to hear from you if it bothers you, because then that also prompts me to give the folks, our colleagues, our partners at USA Today a call and see if we can't work something out.
Just under a minute left, and let me ask you to pitch it to the aspiring journalists who are thinking about it as a career, and they see some uncertainty. And I don't blame them. They see uncertainty in every field, whether it's print journalism, broadcast journalism, wherever it is. You want to sell them on the idea that this is still a great career. Think about it, commit to it, and you can be in this job for hopefully your whole career. Yes? And how do you pitch it?
Yes. I pitch it as this. If you have journalism as something that's in your soul, then you should follow that passion, because what we're talking about today is the platform for the journalism, and I think sometimes there's too much focus on that. It's the journalism and the storytelling and the connecting with community that's really the most important thing. If you're interested in that, please follow your dreams. There'll always be a place for you.
Thanks for taking the time. Karen Magnuson is the executive editor of the Democrat and Chronicle, not only answering our questions, but yours. Got as many as we could in, as we could from via email, Twitter, and the phone lines. And the community appreciates the access to you and your staff. I love having your staff on here, all the great work that you do on a daily basis at the Democrat and Chronicle. Thank you very much, Karen.
Thank you. It was really a pleasure to be here.
All right, short break. We're coming back with a real estate roundtable next hour. Stay with us.